Okay. Good morning, everybody. We are continuing
morning.
On with the Gemara Erev and Daf Lamed Bet. We are on the Bet Lamed Aleph by Pina Prosheshet. So Prosheshet had talked yesterday about how immediately we can expect an agent to fulfill his agency. And we said that there's Machlokim Tumin of Nachman who says that whether the shliach always we can trust him or not. So Nachman said that you can't trust the agent, you can only trust Beis Din. And Rav Shesha said, well, you can trust Beis Din and an agent, just the Beis Din is more reliable to get it done by noon, whereas the agent, you can only trust the getting done by the end of the day. So, Amar of Sheshes Manah Minala. So how do I know that Beis Din is very good about doing things and that an agent will fulfill his mission? So the Tanya learned in Brita, Aisha Sheyesh Aleha Leida Oziva Via Ma'ov Otenet B'Shofar Zevelet V'Ochelet B'Kodshim La'aret. So if a woman who is supposed to be giving a korban yoledet, giving an offering of thanks. That's also a chata, after she has given birth, or if she's bringing a korban after she has been considered to be a zava gadola. So she brings money, she places it in the horn, which is basically it's a collection box, right? It's called a horn because narrow on top, wide on the bottom, so it looks kind of like a horn. Then she's allowed to go, and then she goes to be tovel in the mikvah, and then she eats kochim that evening, right? She's allowed to eat kochim by the evening. So my time up. So why is she allowed to eat immediately when she put in the money for the korban and everything else to get done for her? La mishuv damrina chazaka shalechos shikulto. Is it not because we are sure that the Kohanim are going to make sure to finish it, to do everything properly, that they're being her shaliach, and they're going to make sure to do it all as it's supposed to be done. So, right, so that's how we get to the end of the day thing, because whatever time during the day she did it, so it will be done by sunset, and that's why she can have her kachim that night, because she's not considered to be matara. She's not allowed to eat from kachim. So Rav Nachman, we have Rav Nachman who says that's not a proof for an agent doing his agency. Hatzam ken Rav Shmaya. This is as Rav Shmaya says. Zamar Rav Shmaya. Chazaka ein beitin shal kohanim omdim misham ad sheyichlu komao shav shofar. So Rav Nachman says, would respond according to Rav Shmaya, who says that no, that's only the case for the Beis Din made up of kohanim that sat in the mikdash, who would. Because they would stay there until all the money had been spent from the purchase of sacrifices to make sure that it all been offered. But that's only because the Kohanim are reliable. But that's only because there's a Beis Din of Kohanim in the Mikdash, not because the individual Kohanim are responsible. It's because there's the Beis Din, the committee, aspect of it, like the court is what does it. So Amar Sheshet, Benami and Elas, so I'll try again. There's another reason why I tell you that we know that the messenger will fulfill his mission. So the Tanya learned in Brita, Ha'omel Chaverot Save Lakay Lacha Taini Mitainati, Ochem Hanarai Masran Vadai. So the Brita said that you told your friend to go and collect for me figs from amongst my figs. You can eat them, so you bring them to your house, you eat them right away. And if you're taking mas there, because once they're chayv, you run to your house, then you take mas from them as if they're demai. They're vadai considered to be chayav, because you for sure went and took you the right things. Malay lecha kalkalazo to enem etyanati. But if he told you to fill this basket for yourself from my fig tree, then also manarai, you can eat them. Before we enter their house, in a casual fashion, umasran demai. But if you wanted to bring them inside your house, you have to separate them out from demai, because we're not sure whether or not he did it correctly or not. So the question is, so how does this help us? Vedu Memoriam, Ama Aretz. Also, we had a certain class there. So what are we talking about? That reward, that if you told him to gather for yourself, that he's allowed, like that's a differentiation between definitively needing you to take Maser afterwards versus not. So this is who's involved in this case. The answer is the person who's collecting is an Ama Aretz. It's somebody who's not so stringent in the laws of Trubuk Maserot. So for him, that's the one which is, so since he's the one who wanted to do it for you, therefore you can't rely upon it. Aval b'chaver, ochel v'emesarek laser, but if it's a chaver, so he's reliable in terms of trumot masrot, then you're allowed, then you don't need to take maser, because you can rely upon the fact that your messenger, when he was picking up the fix for you, he also separated out trumot masrot for you. We're talking about l'omer medra memorim, what's the case? Aval b'chaver, eno ochel adri aser. So hearing Gamaliel explain it differently. Now, what are we talking about? Was an Ama Aretz is the one who you have a problem with. Right, so the one that we're worried about, Basra and Vadai, is for Ama Aretz who collected for you. He definitely didn't do it, but Aval B'Chaber, B'Chaber collected for you. So the issue is actually a little bit different, because the chaver here will only separate from the foods once they arrive in his hand. But that means they have to have arrived in your hands. They would not separate out Shubhan Masro for an area that's been picked on an area that's not been picked yet. So, if it was for Zachaver, you would need to make sure to be Maaser yourself first. So, Amar Rabbi Nirin Devarai Midivrei Abba. So, Rabbi Nirin, as he says, what I said makes more sense. Because why? Mutav Sheyichshedu B'Chaver Mitzrom Shulom Min Hamukaf V'Lo Yachilu Ameharat Tevalim. So, Yudas says that what I said is more likely than that of his father, Shimon Gamliel, because better, Chaverim would be more likely to be suspected of having taken Truma from a place where from an adjacent place in the field as opposed to that exact place. They're more likely to do that in order to make sure that the Amiharats don't accidentally end up eating Tevel. So if there's anything involved in a chaver in this case, the chaver will actually make, even if it's not necessarily his normal practice, he will go out of his way when he's doing it to make sure that it'll be better off for the Ama Aretz, because he would not want to cause the Ama Aretz to sin. Adkan lo pligi ela the marsavar nechadu, marsavar le nechadu. Right, so they don't really argue. There's a question where Yehudanasi says that you would suspect them of having separated from a place that is not adjacent. Whereas the other one, whereas Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says that Chaver would never do it. Shalom in Hamukaf, they would never take Masra from an adjacent location. They only do it from the exact location that was required. Well, Kuli Alma Chazaka Shalechos and Shichuto. According to both of them, the assumption is the guy you sent to do what you told him to do is going to do it. Whether that mean collecting, whether that mean to separate the Jordan Monster, he'll do it. Just the question is, you know, in what manner will he do it? But he'll definitely go ahead and do it. Rav Nachman, Hatam Kadarav Chanina Choza. Rav Nachman said that we can trust the owner of that case. But why? Only because of what Chanina Choza said. Damar Chanina Choza. As Chanina Chazal says, "Chazaku hu al chaver she'eno motzi davar she'eno mitukan mitachat yado." So the point being, this whole thing's talking about is with a chaver, and a chaver will never let something that is like any produce out of his hands without it making sure that it is ready to be eaten. right, that's already had its truma and masra separated, so there won't be any potential iser involved with eating the produce. So Amar Mar, B'medra, B'morim, so what's the case of the bread we put before talking about? B'Ama Aretz. Right, that's the case where, you know, you'd have to, you know, do take Maser or Demai. But B'chaver, Ochel, V'Ebetzerich L'Aseh, Devei Rebbe. So rather, what is Rebbe saying? That if there's a Chaver there, you don't need to worry at all, and you're good to go. So, hi, Ama Aretz, Dekamar Leman. So the question is, so who was this Ama Aretz speaking to? So the Ama Aretz, so who is he asking to be his shaliach? Is he speaking to Asal Ama Aretz? If so, then shouldn't he have to make the shouldn't Ama Aretz have to serve everything as if it's Tamai? Rather, Ama Aretz is making the request of the owner of the chaver to go collect and bring it to him. So, Ema Seifa, Nirin Dvarai Mdevrei Abba. So let's learn it out from the latter half of this statement. That Nirin Dvarai Mdevrei Abba, that me, i.e., Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, makes more sense than his father, Shimon Gamliel's. If Mutav Shechidu Chavari Lutrom Shalom Rukav, Ayachilu Olam Eha Aretz Tvalim. So in that case, when we talk about the case of the we're assuming that the chaver would have separated from an adjacent location on the field rather than let the Ama Aretz eat tevel. But Ama Aretz by bayata. But what are Ama Aretz doing there if the person eating is a chaver? And if the person who's owns the tree of the Ama Aretz, it's like, what happened in that case then? So, right, so what's the order then? Like, because depending on how the order is who's saying to what, is whether or not all these different svaras about when the chaver is involved is when the food would end up being properly have its truma and masra taken from it. So, Amar Avina, Reshab Ama Aretz, Amar Lachaver. So Ravina says that the first part is talking about where the Ama Aretz asks the Chaver who is the owner. Shefa b'chaver sh'amar l'Ama Aretz. And the latter half is where the Chaver is speaking to the Ama Aretz. And there, b'chaver acher shomo. And then another Chaver is listening. So why would that help? Because when the other Chaver is listening, so then he'll come and do it on behalf of the other Chaver. So Rabbi Savar, oto Chaver, ochel v'ino tzarich la'aser. So Rebbe says, why doesn't the chaver receiving the produce from the Ama Aretz need to take masra? Because his friend, who's also a chaver, overheard, will have gone ahead and taken maaser on whatever fruits that the Ama Aretz is collecting, just in case. So therefore, the third chaver who is receiving the fruits can assume that they already have either been tithed themselves or somebody else has tithed them on his behalf. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, lo yokal ad she'aser. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, you can't eat them until you've separated it out. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, you shouldn't eat until you've separated it, Truma to Masra, because Chaverim don't Ted, right, who are the people who are stringent with every turn last row, they wouldn't separate it out from a different location to that location. And that's what Rabbi said, better that the person is eating, that we should suspect the chaveir, the scrupulous ones, of separating out Truman Masra from the adjacent locations, as opposed to having the Ama Aretz eating tevel. So back to that. So what is the argument then? Like, why would you think that or not that? That what would be wrong with the chaver doing that? So we're going to try and figure that out now. So the my kumifligi. So what are the argument? Rabbi Savar ne'chalel chaver delay aved hu isur kalila v'lo liyavad Ama Aretz isur rabba. So Rabbi holds that it's preferable for a chaver to commit a minor offense than it is for the Amares to do a far greater offense, that of eating Tevel. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Samar, Necha Le'lechaved Le'eben Amar Tisur Rabav, Iu Afil Yisur Kalila Lo Le'eved. Now, it's a question of who's doing the thing that's wrong. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, as opposed to Rabbi says that the Chaver is willing to sin on behalf of the, for a minor, a minor sin. So Shmuel says no, that the chaver would rather have the amaretz do the full sin than him do even a small sin. Okay, so whether or not that's considered to be, you know, a good thing to do or not a good thing to do, I'll leave aside. But also while we're on the concept of chaver, so I'll just give you, you know, a little bit of an explanation, a little bit more of the what a chaver is. It's not just that they were very stringent about Trumot and Masrot. They were also very stringent about eat. They would also take upon themselves to eat Truma, to eat Chulin, meaning unsanctified food, as if it's sanctified. So they would always make sure to go to the mikvah before they would eat, as if the food that they're eating now is considered to be kosher. So if anybody here has ever been to En Gedi, so they have, so there's an article, they have an archaeological dig of the old En Gedi settlement. So it's near to En Gedi, if anybody's, has been or will be in the area. And so there they actually have, by the entrance of every house, there's actually a mikvah. Why? Because they were very, so stringent on laws of Tumah v'Tahara as well as Tumah v'Masra that they would always make sure to go, first things first, and then go home. They would make sure to go to the mikvah. That way, they would be able to eat their produce. Batahara. Okay. So now we are finally getting back to our diagrams. So hopefully, we're now back in the realm of placing of things, not in the so. Bear with me with the diagrams. Hopefully it'll make the coming Mishnah and Gemara more understandable. Okay, so now we're talking about, yes? Okay, so we're now talking about where can you place your Eruv and what's the proper location in order for you, when you're making your Eruv, in order for it to be, because when you put your Erev in a place that's not supposed to be, then your Erev will end up being puzzled. So we're seeing what are places that you're allowed to put that you're allowed to place in order for the Erev to work. So first we're starting off with places that are all outside, not talking about houses yet at all. So Nitano Ba'ilan, Lamal Mesar Tachim En Erovo Eruv, Lamal Mesar Tachim Erovo Eruv. So if one places Erev in a tree above 10 handbreadths, then his Erev is an Erev. Then his Erev is an Erev. It's not an Erev, but if it's below, then it is. So let's just see the photo there. So, okay, so again, we're in Perish Chai. Everybody sees the diagram. So, okay, so here we go. So that's the one on top, right? So the question is, where did you place your food? Did you place it within 10 of the ground or 10 above? So, and the next question.
Are we saying if it's more than 10 above, it's in a different rishus, or?
Correct, it's a different rishus. I was holding off on the Svaras of the Gemara, but good point, you got it.
Okay, sorry.
No, spot on. Yes, that is the reason, as Rashi quotes, I think the Gemara will also get into it as well. So, Atano b'bor, afilo amok mea ama ervo eruv. Conversely, if you put it inside of a pit, even if it's a 100 amot deep, that's still a valid eruv. So there's no limit on that in that direction. Okay, so now, okay, so now, so again, we're looking at the height question. So Yati Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Rabbi Asi, Rava Bar Natan, Yati Rabbi Nachman Gabayu, Yati Amri. Hi, Elon de Kayavi. So, Bechir Baraba and Rabbi Asi and Rabbi Barnatan were sitting before Nachman and Rabbi sits down, and then as he sits down, he's asked them a question. He says, "Hi, Elon de Kayavi. What type of of tree we're talking about, right? Where is it? Where is this tree that we're planting our erev on? Elam b'dekai v'shut yachid, mali l'mala, mali l'mata. If you're saying that this tree is in somebody's private property in a rishut yachid, then what is the difference whether or not it's in a, it's above 10 tefach or below? It's still in its own separate rishus, so the problem should be the same. Rishut yachid ola d'rakia, as you know, as the Gemara assumes that you know, but this is going all the way back to Gemara, the beginning of the Gemara Shabbos, and Davav, we're talking about the various types of rishut and how and how they work. So we say rishut yachid, as opposed to rishut rab, which only goes until 10 tefach. A rishut hayachid, individual's domain, it go you have building right, you have, you know, the air rights all the way up to the heavens. So if you want it, so you actually have a lot more area that's considered to be yours than you'd have thought. So rather, what would you say? The tree must be in the public domain. Wait, so then where are you planning on? We said when you place the Erev, that's as if that's going to be your domain. For in the case of Erev Tchumen, that's where you're planning on residing for Shabbos. So you can't reside in a place that's more than 10 tefachim off the ground. That's just physically impossible. You can't. Like, we people don't fly. So, like, you can't live there. Right? No levitation allowed. We're on the International Space Station. So, Ilay Mandinit Kavin Lishbot Lamala, Huv Erevo Mokam Echad. If you want to say that he intended to establish his residence in the tree, then that would make sense. Elai did kavish but lamata ha kamishdamish b'ilan. But if he placed it on the tree, then he has actually been using a tree on Shabbos, which is asmei d'rabanan. Right. So again, we have our case. We have the loaf of bread, and the question is like, did we use it? Did we do these loaf of bread properly or not? So, right. So, could we use it? And if you're putting in a place you can't access, then that's a problem. So, you basically get a catch 22. So then, like, if you're living in the tree, well, again, you could. But that's a problem. Either then, it's like, well, how are you living? How are you planning on living above 10 tefachim? Is one question. The other question is that if you're planning on using the ground, residing in the area below the tree, well, then you're using the tree, which is what used to treat in Shabbos, that's Midrash Rabbanan, because you might come to break off a branch. L'olam d'kai b'rishut harabim, mikam l'shbo l'mata. So what's the case we're talking about is where you are placing the food from your Eruv in the rishut harabim, in the public domain, mikam l'shbo l'mata, and you are planning on residing below. So, and then what's the case then? Rabbi Ki, and there's going to be Yehuda, says this is a problem. Amar, as he says, kol davar shuv shuv shvut lo gozru ala ben shmasha. So then Rabbi Yehuda says, anything that's the Rabbanan doesn't apply during ben shmasha. So why is this going to help us if it doesn't apply during ben shmasha? So the question is, at what point does the Eruv go into effect? So the Eruv goes into effect at ben shmasha. But the Isra Midrabanan doesn't come in until later. So that's why that's going to help us. Because we said that whenever you set up an Eruv, it has to be at the time or at the onset of Shabbos, which means by the beginning of Ben Shmashot. It has to be in an area that you can access and use properly. If not, then there's a problem. So another question. So the problem is if the Erev is in a tree, if the Erev is in a place where you can't access, right? That's a problem. But if the Erev is in a place where it'll become awesome and abundant to access it later, then that should be fine. So here, currently you're at the beginning of the Ben Shmasho time between sunset and true dark. So in that time between, so that would be like twilight. So that time, right? So as long as it's the beginning of that time period is allowed, even at the end of the time period, it's problematic. That'll be okay for the purposes of our Eruv.
I'm not sure I fully understand that, Rabbi. So we're saying that if on Shabbos you're even rabbinically prohibited from accessing, how can you make that your place?
So there's two parts of Shabbos, right? There's Shabbos Midoraita, and there's Shabbos, right? When does Shabbos start, and when do the Isurim for Shabbos start? So Shabbos starts at the beginning of Ben HaShemashot, but the Isurim Durabanan of Shabbos only start at
Shabbos. At Shkia, whatever. Three stars. Okay.
Three stars, right? So there's three times we're dealing with. So there's Shkia, which is sunset. Then there's Ben HaShemashot, which is the interim time period. How long that is subject to a very large debate. So we're going to call it just the interim time period and call it twilight. Then there's Tzedakah Kavim, when the stars come out, which we're going to call true night.
Right.
Okay. So in between sunset and true night, that middle time is called Ben HaShemashot. So Midoraita, right? When you accept Shabbos, we normally accept Shabbos starting from Shkia, right? That's when we accept Shabbos. But when the Isurim Durabanan were set to only start going into effect at Seder Kochavim. So there's actually that little window there where you can have, where Shabbos has entered Midoraita, but Midorabanan, Midorabanan haven't gone into effect yet. And that's why since Erev starts the beginning of that time period, Erev starts the beginning of Ben HaShemashot, right? So once the Erev has gone into effect, even though later you can't access it, it would be okay. Similar to the fact that, let's say if you'd had your Erev in the beginning of Shabbos and somebody ate it, right?
That was the piece that I was missing.
Then, because it started being extant, it's okay.
Okay, that was the part that I was missing that I forgot about. So even if it's not available to you on Shabbos, either physically or halachically, the fact that it was placed before it was biblical Shabbos makes it okay.
Correct. As long as Shabbos and Erev had gone into effect, even though part of it hasn't yet, even though later it becomes problematic, as long as at one point your Erev was kosher, that's fine. And also, I like to point out here, we say the Erev is still good. That's referring to the food of the Erev.
Yes.
As opposed to nowadays, when we say the Erev is now, we normally don't mean that the Erev was eaten, because that wouldn't be the biggest issue. You just put another, but they should, when the walls fell down, because when the walls fall down, it's much harder to fix. And while the walls are down, it's also a problem for that Shabbos right then as well.
Yes.
Which is why on Shabbos, we are allowed to ask a non-Jew to fix this. One of the cases where you can do a Mir Lanoskar on Shabbos, for Sarek Rabim, is if the Eruv falls down, you can tell a non-Jew to go and fix the Eruv, in terms of the Eruv wall. Hmm. That's one of the examples brought because of it's a need for the many, because everybody would like to be able to carry but people who aren't aware of the Erev being down, you'd rather them not be violating any Isurim, even if it's only Bishogeg, it's only by accident.
Thank you, Rabbi. I didn't mean to take you on a tangent, but thank you.
We have the time, and I think it's a valuable thing to talk about, so not to worry. So, Amar Lahu Rav Nachman, Yishar. So Rav Nachman says, correct, Chen Amar Shmuel, right? And Shmuel agrees too. Amar Leh, Patrito Kulehai. So did you really need to explain so much? Inhu Nami Hachika Patriba. There's another way of explaining this. El Hasi Amru. Kabayat Lebe Gemara. Amrlu In. So they asked him, have you established this lima that you mentioned before as part of your regular learning? Like, meaning, is this something that you just thought of now, or something that we've already established? So it marnami amar nachman amar shmuel halacha. So you're right. So we actually, right? Yes, it is. And how do we know this has been established? So Rav Nachman then quotes Shmuel, stating, "Hacha be'ilan ha'omei b'rishut tarabi maskinan vo'a sara v'rachav arba." So Rav Nachman says, actually, it learns that from somewhere else. So We're dealing with a tree that is, again, with the tree we're talking about is staying in the public domain. And the tree is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim wide. So it's a full separate rishus. Okay? And then you established to reside in the area below it. Right? Not on that area, but below the area. Actually, the best diagram is still the one up here. Sorry. See, that one was a little bit more clear, but not quite yet. So, if we're saying that little shelf that's on top of, or like I said, the top of the stump, is more than 10, is more than 4 tefachim wide by 4 tefachim wide. So, alright, and you want to reside below it. And the Rebbe, he is Kurim Yehuda Nasi, the Amar Kol Devar Shumish Mishvut Lo Gazra Ala Ben Eshmashot. And why do we say that it's okay? Because the problem of living in the tree is only a problem in Rabbanan, and it only goes into effect during Ben Eshmashot, right? When we said before about when the Shabbos goes into effect, and when the air goes into effect, as long as at that time period it's allowed, even if later it becomes forbidden, as long as it was initially allowed for even a moment, that's what counts. As long as it's allowed during the Ben Eshmashot time period, for however long that happens to be, which we'll leave for later. So Amar Rava, so when is this the case? Lo shanu ela b'ilan ha'omed b'chutz libor ha'ir. Val ilan ha'omed b'tok libor ha'ir, afilu mal ha'asara, ha'rei ze eruv demata k'man demal yadamya. Okay, so now Rava says, so what is this case about the tree, but you're putting an eruv in a tree and it being a problem, it's in the height? That's only if you had the tree placed outside of the outskirts of the city, the Ibor Ear. Ibor Ear is measured based on if there's a distance of 70 2/3 amot outside of the city. So that's Ibor Ear, which in modern distance is roughly 35 meters. Because that's current climb 9, not current climb 9-ish, but we'll do that way because it's just easier for our keeping track of it in our heads. So an amma is half a meter. So that also means that a mil, which also we'll be dealing with a lot, is which is 2,000 amot, works out to be roughly 1 kilometer. So again, it's not precise for halakhic definitions, but for functional people's, you know, guesstimating where things are, it's very helpful. I could do it in miles too, but then in Roman miles, like it's done with the American system, but then it gets a little more, then there's a lot more fractions. So we'll stick with kilometers. So.
Yes, you are in Canada now, Rabbi.
I know, but yeah, so that's why meters is the best, because they work better with the halakhic system. That's why they're the best. I mean, also easier to use in general. So we'll go with them. So. Okay, so right, so we're talking, so again, when you're outside of the, so if you place the air outside of the city, outside of the city proper, not the, again, there's the city Ibor Ha'ir and there's Tchum Ha'ir. So Ibor Ha'ir is considered to be fully part of the city. Tchum would be the 2,000 amot surrounding. So we're saying Ibor Ha'ir, meaning this is something that would be swallowed up as if it's entirely part of the city itself. So if it's within the 70 2/3 amot, or the roughly 35 meters. So if it's that close to the city, then even above 10, it's still considered to be an eruv because it's still considered to be in the town. There's no problem. And why is that the case? Because we say that within a city, we treat everything as if it's filled with earth, meaning that anything located in the town itself or its outskirts is considered to be all one area, therefore it doesn't matter the height, you're still good to go. So, right, so even though, you know, so see this tree with a little bent next to it. So if it's in that tree, no worries about how high it is, but if it's a tree aleph that's closer to us, then it's a problem. And that solves our issue. Okay? So ihachi chutz libura shel ir nami. Wait, if that's the case, then if it's also outside of this outskirt, that should also work. If you have your letter, wait, but once you're outside of the city's outskirts, right, then you should also be fine, because we normally say that when you put an arrow somewhere, you get the dot amot around it, right? That's your residence, the dot amot surrounding the item, not just where the item is. And that would mean that now that whole area is considered to be its own Rishut Yachid. And we say that Rishut Yachid should go all the way up to the heavens, right? So that's what we have in diagram 3, right? So if you put it up in the tree, let's put it here, that's a little easier to see. So you see how there's the loaf in the tree there, it's very high up. But because, you know, you go down and then you get the 4x4 amot around, and therefore it's on its own separate rishus and you're good. So why not say that? And then it's all up to the heavens. And then we're done. So Amar Yitzchak Bray Derav Masharshia Hacha BeIlan Anota Chutz LaArba Amot Askinan. Vinikaven Lishbo Bikara. So Rav Yitzchak, the son of Rabbi Sharsha, says, what's the case? This tree has long branches, right? It's not a palm tree, which goes straight up. It's one of these nice trees, let's say an oak, or insert your other favorite tree, right? Could be maple tree also, right? And then you've got, big leaves, big branches, it covers a huge area. So you put it in one of the branches, that's not by the base, and it's more than 4 amot out of the way. But you wanted to rest at the base of the tree, and that's the problem. So you see here, right? So you see this is the mukter zone, right? In source number 4, right? So you wanted it to rest in place Aleph, but you're right, which gets this whole nice area. Even if you were to say, we also say that you can choose which direction your forearm will go in, whether they're centered. Again, this is subject to a halakha that we'll get to later also. But how do your forearm will go? Are you automatically at the center? Or can you put yourself in the corner of it? But either way, if the tree is big enough, it'll be out of your reach. It'll be out of your 4 amot, and that'll be a problem.
So is the 4 measured from the trunk of the tree?
It's from wherever you had in mind to reside. And as far as the way that you draw the square, is actually subject to machloket. We'll get to the Gemara later. The question is, do you get your Dalat Amot? Are you always the middle, or can you say that I'm standing in the corner?
Uh-huh.
Right? So when you're measuring the Amot, so depending on how you draw the box, right, so it can give you a lot more space in one direction or the other direction.
But in diagram 4, where the bread is outside of that square, why is the square not drawn around where the bread is as opposed to where the trunk of the tree is?
Because you had in mind to reside by the trunk, by the base of the tree, as opposed to by where your bread is.
I would have thought you'd have in mind that your 4 would be based on where you put your bread.
Correct. If you had that in mind, then that would be allowed. But the problem is you had in mind the wrong location.
Okay.
That's the problem. You put it in the wrong place.
Right.
So therefore, you have your location and your Erev are in different locations, which means that you didn't do an Erev. You have to make sure you have to have in mind the right place when you're doing your Erev, and then the question is, so umay lamala, umay lamata. So then what are we talking about when we say above or below asar tachim? So dehadar zakiv. So then how are we saying that you could place it in multiple places? We're talking about a branch that sticks out all the way to the side. So basically we have one of those trees that makes a weird right angle, that makes a weird right angle out of that branch. So I'm sure you've seen some of these trees, because depending on how the sunlight falls, that you can get, see in diagram number 5, you can get one not quite perpendicular, but I've seen very close to perpendicular trees, where it looks just like that. Yeah, the trees are weird. But they may be a nice place to sit if you're ever looking for, a place to sit. They are definitely unique among God's creations as I didn't know a tree could grow that way, but it works. Since we've finished the daf, so let's just go back and sum up. We've covered a lot of new concepts today, so I just want to make sure that everything's clear, and we'll continue talking about our our tree and the placement of the tree and the tree being crooked and everything else. We'll continue with that tomorrow. So let's just if you could do a recap. If anybody has any questions, please ask them. So we started off continuing from yesterday, talking about how do we know about the reliability of Beit Din and how quickly they get things done, and how versus the reliability of an individual to get things done. And we talked about a support for the of reliability of the individual versus that of the Beit Din of the court. And we said that from when a woman brings her korbanot, after she's given birth, or after she has been a zava, meaning after she has been considered to be she's considered to have bled consecutively on three consecutive days that are not during her set menstrual cycle. For more on that, please see Masech Anita for how to calculate that. It's very complicated. So not enough time to get to how that works out now. But basically, so after she'd bring her korban, so she used to pay money toward the kohanim, so, and then the kohanim would take care of everything. So then she would be allowed to eat. She would consider to be tahor by evening, assuming she had already done her tefillah and the mikvah, once she'd already immersed. So we say that only works if you assume that the kohanim did their job. So we said that's all that, that so that would imply that the agent does his agency, the shliach oseh shlichuto. But then the response back of Rav Nachman was, no, that doesn't mean anything, because actually there was a Beit Din in charge of doing all the korbanot. So therefore the Beit Din was reliable, not the individual kohens. So we're back to square one. And then we had a case about the question of when one person sends another friend somebody else to co-collect figs on their behalf. Question is, when do they or don't they have to, separate Truma and Masro? And we said that came down to this, more that was primarily around the question of about who's a chaver and who's not Maris, who's reliable about taking Truma and Masro, and who's not reliable about taking Truma and Masro. And then it also, and as well as within the reliable person, when we say they're reliable, what exactly do they do? At what point do they generally separate the Truma and Masro? And would they do it even for a case that they purchased, that's not Lachasila, but Bidyevad, would they do it in a case, let's say, not from the exact location where they should be, from the place adjacent to it, which normally you would not want to do, but would work, but might be slightly a slight transgression involved in doing so. And the question is, would you do that in order to save your friend from sinning? Again, which is a larger discussion of Soka Kadesh Chavera Nisgar, right? You will sin in order so that your friend will benefit. The Sugya primarily comes up in Gemara Shabbos, which hopefully had been covered extensively back then. So the question of to what extent can you violate something so your friend doesn't have to violate something? And then we got to that concluded our discussion about the chaver. And then we got to the case of putting your eruv in a tree. The question of where in the tree you put it, was it too high, was it too low? When is it considered to be accessible for you? When is it not considered to be accessible for you? When is it considered to be a place that's inaccessible midoraita versus inaccessible midrabanan, and how that works out, and whether where exactly when you're intending to rest, you're intending to rest by the tree, or are you intending to rest by the by where the food is, and how if there are different locations that creates a problem, because you have to have the food in the location that you're planning on residing, because if the food's not, then basically in the area location, then your Eruv actually ends up not being a valid Eruv, which would be very problematic. And so then hopefully we'll continue with our discussion about the placement of the Eruv, well, albeit, you know, is it in the city limits, outside of the city limits, and where it is or isn't considered to be filled in and valid to carry from. So hopefully we'll deal with that a little bit a little bit tomorrow, and we'll get into more of these fun pictures of the, you know, about the height and the shape of the eruv. So that's it for today. Anybody have any questions?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, everybody.
Have a good day.
That's it. Take care.